Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am super pumped today to be joined by my guy, Sean Anderson of CHGO, who does an amazing job over there with all things White Sox, has been kind enough to bring myself and Ian on his show and James different occasions. And, I figured it was time to return the favor and bring Sean on because he's always a blast to talk to about the White Sox. So we're going to just dive into a little bit of everything about the White Sox roster and offseason and where additions can be made. Welcome in, Sean.
Thank you. I feel a little bit bad about not having Dylan on yet, but I think he has to become of legal drinking age for me to actually allow him on the show.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair standard. He'll get on one day for sure. You know, he's working his way up in the chain of command, and I know he'll laugh listening to this. But yeah, no, we always love coming on your show, and you do a great job over there. So yeah, I wanted to just talk some White Sox because I think we talked about this pre-recording a little. Like, we're at the time in the off season where like the baseball world's focused on the World Series. Obviously, it's been an incredible World Series. I'm pulling for the Jays. I don't know about you. But then, like, we're kind of just waiting around a little bit for some dominoes to fall. So this next few weeks is like, let's talk to some new people. Let's just chop it up, have some fun, and kill some time until the free agency and everything gets rolling, right?
Right now, White Sox news is Sam Antonacci's 20 AFL bats, and that's it. And it's, you know, it is news, but even then, when BA is putting him as the top hottest prospect in the AFL, I see second Kevin McGonigal. It's like, you know, McGonigal's definitely way better than Antonacci is, but that's a different story. Sure. And you bring up rooting for the Jays. I don't know. I was watching that live stream with you and Jack in the 17th inning. And when Jack said, man, this is just like watching an international league game where Will Klein is pitching to Taylor Heineman and he's just getting like infield pop-ups. I was a little bit more impressed with Klein's appearance once I saw the stuff plus grades for him, and like everything was 110 plus, and it was absolutely absurd. But at some point, it just felt inevitable that the Dodgers were going to hit a home run and win that game. And even with the Dodgers having a 3-2 lead, they're the Dodgers. Even with the Jays having a 3-2 lead, they're still the Dodgers.
I don't know, man. We'll see. We'll see. I think Yamamoto on the mound tomorrow makes it tough. Like, that guy is as close to invincible on the mound as anybody can be right now. And Savage did his best to do that yesterday. And he's just spectacular. And, you know, it's a different conversation for another day, that the fact that he was taken 20th overall in the White Sox, you know, didn't go that direction and went at other many different directions they could have gone earlier in the draft. So that's an interesting thing, you know, just fallout from this playoffs right now, watching what Savage is doing and looking at what Connor Griffin's doing and some of these other guys right now. But regardless of that, like I think they have a shot. I think everybody counted them out, and I think they, you know, all they got to do is win one of two at home. And yeah, it's the Dodgers, but if you can get Yamamoto to at least have to go to the bullpen, maybe instead of throwing another complete game, then maybe you get, you know, Roky a bit beat up or something, or you just get him some innings under his arm, and then come Saturday, you have a better shot, or maybe they get on Yamamoto somehow. I think it goes to seven, and then from there, we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, even then, if you have to trust one of the guys that just pitched, either Snell or Yosavage, I know Yosavage was so dominant, but I'm going to trust Snell, who's been there and done that before. I know it was a tough outing, but maybe in game seven, they just don't pitch to Vlad, the only guy that can do damage to them pretty much in that lineup. I know Schneider's been had that leadoff homer, and Alejandro Kirk has been amazing, but now with Springer out, it's just like, don't throw any pitches to Vladdy.
Yeah, he's going to get the Shohei in game three treatment with five straight walks. I mean, he honestly could at some point in these next two games because the guy's having one of the best playoffs ever in Vladdy, and then why would you pitch to him at this point, right? But anyways, that's enough World Series talk. The point is, you know, we're at that time in the offseason where it's hard to find things to talk about, but I like just talking to other people. You know, I had Matt Zaleski on this week to talk about the pitching dev. We're going to have some player interviews. We got a lot of various stuff going on. For now, I just want to like get your take because everybody's got their different opinions. Obviously, I focus on the prospect side more. You talk a lot about the Major League team every day throughout the season. When you look at this team, and we'll start on the, you know, you can pick offense or defense, which side you want to start on. my biggest thing right now is like, let's take a step back and let's look at this next year and say, hey, who are the guys that we actually think are part of this team beyond 2026? Not just, oh, this guy's going to be on the roster this year, maybe earn a spot, maybe try to get some innings and see what happens, right? Like, who are the guys you look at and you say, hey, like, these guys are going to be on this team for 2+ years and can be someone we can pencil in to a legitimate part of this roster. You can pick off which side of the ball you want to start on, and we can get into it from there, because I'm just curious on who you have in that category.
We're talking about people that are in the organization, not just like on the major league roster.
Currently in the organization. We'll get there after. Currently in the White Sox organization.
Players that are currently on the roster, yeah. Teal, Colson, Shane Smith, in the organization. I put Hagen / Noah. I think both will be there, but I think you can count on one of the lefties being there for sure. And then I will put Bonimer in there. I think if you had to judge either Billy Carlson or Bonimer, I think there's more of a possibility that Bonimer ends up being a part of this team's future, because if Colson sticks at shortstop, where are you playing Carlson? Right? Like, I mean, the whole talk is that he's the greatest defensive shortstop since Dansby Swanson or whatever, since, you know, prep high schoolers. Like, it seems like he's going to be a shortstop, whether he can hit or not. So I think that Teal, Colson, Hagen, Noah, Shane, and Caleb Bonimer are my, my list.
Before we get into the minor league, that's a good list. I want to think there's a few more guys on that list than that. I think that is a good baseline, honestly. I do. I'd put Braden in there as well for a baseline guy.
Yeah.
I think that he's done enough where he will be on this team for many years, whether, you know, I hope it's as successful as possible, but I think that's a good baseline. I also think Caro's on that list. I've heard a lot of negativity on Caro in the past month or two from White Sox fans, and I would welcome your take on it, but I can't quit on him. He's been my guy for a few years. I get why people are jumping now and saying Teal's the catcher. Where does that leave Caro? Is he just an average hitting DH, right? Like, I understand that perspective. I just think that baseball as a whole is moving towards this multiple catcher world where teams are going to value having two catchers that they actually trust to catch baseball games on their roster. And I also think that we didn't get to see the best version of Caro yet. I think that we saw a really, really good 2-3 months from Kyle Teal, and I get why that gives people encouragement. I think Teal is part of the core for sure. I wouldn't be shocked if you woke me up from a dream in 5 years and told me Caro was as good or better than Teal still. I really do believe that. So I still would put both the catchers in that bucket personally.
You're right to include Braden. And I do agree with you that having two decent catchers is important on a roster. But, I mean, it could just be Corey Lee. Like, Corey Lee isn't bad. Corey Lee, I think, is exactly what you want in a backup catcher. He's like 26. So I don't know how they will fit Caro and Teal into the same lineup. So the three guys that I have question marks around were Brooks, because I think they really like him and the versatility of him. He could just be a bench guy for like five to 6 years, right? Leary. Like White Leary. And then there's Chase and Edgar. I think Chase showed spurts and a lot better spurts than Edgar showed, but Edgar showed a lot more consistency.
Yeah.
And I think the issue with Caro is not about the player, but the fact that I don't think he's good enough to be a DH. And if Teal isn't picking up another glove to learn first or left field, like, I want to see Kyle Teal as much as possible. You talked me into Kyle Teal getting the extension over Colson Montgomery, and I think that's probably the smartest idea. I found this stat. Do you know how many catchers since 1995 that have played at least 75% of their games at catcher in the rookie season had an OPS plus over 120?
See, this is why I love you and having you on. I'm going to go with 3.
Close. It's 4. Okay. 2 in 2025, Drake Baldwin and Kyle Teal.
And Kyle Teal. Wow.
And then Adley Rutschman in 2022 and Wilson Contreras since in 2016.
Wow.
That's since 1995.
And Wilson Contreras also fairly quickly shifted off of being a regular catcher too. So that's, you know, 3 guys on that list that are actually catching still today, right?
Yeah. So I really think that like Teal is worthwhile being the catcher. And even with the Jays, like, they had Jansen and Kirk, and obviously Jansen's contract and the constraints on that really forced him out and had Kirk emerge as the guy. But I think trade Edgar while he's still young and try to add to this team, whether it is pitching wise or at the corners, because right now it doesn't seem like Vargas is like on this list, right? He hasn't established himself as part of the core. And you know, maybe Colson shifts to third base, but if he's good enough to stay at shortstop, I'll take the guy that has 30 homer pop at shortstop and can play above average defense. So I'm not sold on Caro being here, because I think there's ways that
interesting. Okay,
he works his way out. Not even because he's a bad player, just Teal's better.
So starting on the lineup side, and then we'll get into pitching, because I have the pitching is where my brain goes to like nerd mode, and I get super into the weeds here. But on the offensive side, the guys you list there, assuming whether it is, you know, if your idea on Carroll, which I don't necessarily see, I see the idea. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can see the vision there. Either way, though, if you were to trade Carroll, you're not adding a catcher because Corey Lee would slot in there. And if you're trading Corey Lee, Edgar Carroll would stay. You know, the catching situation is not an area that needs to be addressed. Even if you do trade one of Carroll or Lee, like you've got at least two catchers that are locked in. You've got Colson Montgomery, the catching position cleared, Colson Montgomery cleared. We didn't really name any other hitters there that you're fully locking in. So when you look at the offense, so then from there, right, you've got Vargas, who's going to play a corner. I don't know if it's going to be third or first. It probably is a combination of both, I think. But he's going to still play every day this season. I don't know if it'll be beyond this season, right? Then that's a TBD for sure. He's still going to play this year at a corner pretty much every day. You've got Meidroth. You've got my guy Antonacci on the way, who are both going to get infield reps. I mean, the more time goes on, like everything I'm hearing is that Sam Antonacci is going to be in Chicago decently early in the season. It's not going to be opening day, I don't think, but like he'll be in Chicago May or June is my expectation at this point.
When we were at Sox Park, I got the chance to interview Gene Watson, and I was like, who's the guy that no one's talking about that you love inside the organization? He brought up Antonacci. So yeah, you're right on.
Yeah, I think so. So looking, that's the infield, right? And then you've got Lenin Sosa and Curtis Meade, who are both still in the picture one way or another, right? I still think Lenin is kind of my opinion of the most clear trade target within the infield. Flip to the outfield, it's Robert, Tuchman, and Benintendi. From there, it's nobody that's super of consequence, I think, beyond those three. Obviously, I think there could be an addition there. You could see one of those guys get moved. Which spots in the offensive side of the ball do you think are the clearest areas to add or adjust something on this roster right now?
They need some corner, at least when we're talking free agent wise. They need somebody to, I think, play first base, because the third base options are pretty much, do you want Yoan Moncada back? I think most White Sox fans, they either love him or despise him to no end. So I don't think third base is going to be where they add. I think it's likely going to be at first base. Like, I talked myself into Josh Bell. He increased his bat speed with the Washington Nationals. I see the face. I get it. He's just tall. It's more of like being a switch hitter who's 6'4", right? He gets hot at sometimes. He's kind of like Lenin Sosa in a way. He's just 6'4". But yeah, I don't really know what they're going to do. Like, I really think that the idea is for them to start being good and competitive, maybe 500-ish around 2027. And I really am interested at what the roster will look like at the All-Star break, because then that, I think, you'll have more of an idea of, is Meidroth going to be your second baseman come opening day 2027? Is Vargas on the roster come 2027? I think Lenin, it's a question mark on if he should be in the opening day roster in 2026. So if he, you know, is still around, if he works his way out by the middle of the All-Star break, like, I think we'll have a more clarity on where they need to add. But power in general, just any position that can hit for power, I think they need that. They don't have any first baseman up and coming. They don't have a third baseman that I think is up and coming. Most people seem to be out on Ramos. Obviously Montgomery, Braden is coming up, but he doesn't seem to be like a pop threat. It's the all-around game that people like with Braden. I love George Wolkow, like the idea of George Wolkow, but you haven't really seen the production from that. Like, maybe it's Fausk, but even then he seems like he could be in the Braden-esque of, right. So I really think this team needs some influx of power this offseason just to maybe raise the floor of this offensive team.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing to consider there is, like, you Colson has leaned into that archetype. We talked about this when I joined you a few weeks ago. Like, he's leaned into that power hitter and that three outcome hitter in some ways, and that's a great step. I do think Braden is still viewed as a power over hit guy, right? So I think Braden, his kind of niche there is that he's patient. He's going to get walks, and hopefully you're going to see the power tick up from him. I still think there's more room to see his power really tick up. So that is a guy you have on the way who you expect to debut sometime later in 26, probably, who does have ample power upside. If the infield, right, if you're looking at the other thing with third base you mentioned there, if it's not Vargas, I would be interested to see if they try to have Antonacci get more reps at third, because he has gotten reps primarily at second in the Arizona Fall League, and even during the season, it was primarily second base. He played third throughout college, so this isn't a guy that hasn't played third. He's definitely a smaller physical stature guy for third base, but at the same time, he has played third, so I could see a world where if Meidroth starts the season hot and Antonacci's ready to get called up, maybe it means Antonacci plays more third, Vargas shifts more to first. But I still am with you on the fact that I think a first base ad, just to have a plug, even if it's a short-term ad, makes a lot of sense, because then you just let your left side of the infield be Colson and Vargas and see what it does. And even if it means sprucing in Antonacci or whatever, Ramos as a backup, right? You have flexibility to just get a guy at first. But then it's like you have to move off of either a Meade or a Sosa if you're going to add a corner infielder either way, right?
And Antonacci, it's such a difficult archetype to work at third base. Since 2021, there's been 35 primary third basemen that have at least gotten 350 plate appearances with 10 or less homers. I mean, he'll be closer to the, under five club, which is pretty much Ke'Bryan Hayes, Josh Rojas, Ramon Urias, Mikel Garcia, John Birdie, Joey Wendell, and Yulis Ariz. Like, I don't know if he'll ever have enough power to be at that position. Like he does have the speed, he does have the ability to get on base, but I mean that on base number will need to be Luis Ariz-esque, like for him to have a weighted runs created plus like barely over 100. So I think he's a really tough position to have at third base. Talk me into him. I know you've seen more from him. Like 9 for 13 isn't something to scoff at. I think it's 13 for 17 he's been on base in the AFL. The AFL doesn't have these top-end pitchers, still. Yeah.
So with Antonacci, it's one of the most efficient swings you'll see. He has a really, really good just bat path ability to get the bat on the ball in a consistent manner that pretty much nobody in the organization has, to be honest. Like he could be the best general like hit tool guy on this roster, like tomorrow, and it wouldn't shock me. That's where the appeal is for me. It's also a guy who has shown the ability to play solid defense across the infield. Yeah, he's not a shortstop, but like you're gonna get quality defense from him anywhere you put him in the infield. It's gonna be plus at second base, it's gonna be probably average to above average at third base, and it could be a pinch backup guy at shortstop, right? So he could be the guy who backs up Colson at shortstop and isn't playing there regularly, but can play there once or twice a week if you need him to, right? So it's the versatility, it's the hit tool, it's the approach. He's going to draw walks. And I also think he's starting to find more juice. His 90th EV is up in the AFL. You're seeing him tap into, he hit a 106.7 in AFL. It's not going to be 120. It's not, it's not going to be the 1.815s you're seeing from Colson, right? But he's pushing up the EV slowly. He has a very strong launch angle optimization. So he's really able to, as much as it is more line drive oriented, he's able to drive the ball. It's not like he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot. So for a contact hitter to be able to elevate enough to drive the ball into gaps, we'll see what happens. I think he's going to be playing a lot of innings for this team. I agree with you. It's definitely more of a second base profile, though, which creates an interesting situation with Meidroth, where it's like, how do you find room for both those guys in your lineup? And long term, I don't think you really do, unless it means Antonacci shifting to the outfield, which I'm not opposed to. But from all indications, like, it hasn't even been tested yet. So,
Right. And the issue, too, with Antonacci moving to the left field is, or just the outfield in general, is like, where will he play? Because by All-Star break, I'd hope Braden is in right field. Like, there's no one really else to play right field if you want to see 36-year-old Mike Tauchman be my guest. I really don't want to come midseason 2026. Hopefully Roberts traded by that point, so maybe we see more Baldwin in center field, but he doesn't even seem like the long-term fit there. And then you have just Benintendi rotting in left field. Like, it would be such a nice gift this offseason to free up left field, to where if Antonacci plays the first 2 months in left fields and makes a fool of himself, you're getting that opportunity to see him at that position while Chase is getting the opportunity at second. And it's really, Chase can look behind him and just see the guy that is ready to replace him if he doesn't really, is up to snuff at second base. I wonder, though, like with Meidroth, with Antonacci, with Gerald Perez, seemingly all second baseman-ish, like, do they try to make Bonomer a third baseman? Because they're really, again, it isn't a corner in this system. Maybe it is Colson, but again, like, Colson didn't impress me that much at third base, and he seemed pretty natural at shortstop. Like, I don't really want to move off the 30-homer guy.
In my opinion, once you've seen it now this first few months in the big leagues, Colson is a shortstop unless he shows he can't be, and Bonomer will play shortstop in the minors and some third base. He's been playing both already, right? He will be the third baseman of the future unless Colson shows he's not the shortstop of the future, right? I think it's the give and take there, where it's like, yes, I think that they're not going to push Bonomer off shortstop because it helps development of any infielder to still play shortstop, and he's still good at shortstop. But he will be penciled at the third base spot in 2 years from now if Colson remains at shortstop, right? I think that's pretty – maybe that's simplifying it, but I don't think it's that complicated. I think that assuming if Colson proves he can stick it short, he'll stick it short. Bonnemer will shift to third. If Colson really struggles at short in the next year or two, then maybe Bonnemer can push him out of short and Colson shifts to third. Like I think either way, that's kind of the plan.
Yeah, I brought up the idea of maybe trading Carlson. Do you think that Bonnemer maybe even gets floated? Because the one thing that we haven't talked about is a lot about the offensive profile. This team got better defensively, but there was really nowhere up from 2024. This team, I don't know if it's really found their defensive footing just yet. I liked what we saw from Colson. Chase wasn't consistent enough at second base, but maybe we saw flashes. I do wonder if they really like that Carlson profile of we know he's going to be a gold glove, whatever, at shortstop, because that raises our ability to be an 81-81 team consistently.
There's just... it's too far of an away from an issue. I think that you don't, that this team, first and foremost, you need talented big league players, and then you can figure out all the fit stuff. And we're talking about all this fit stuff, but at the same time, like, you gotta get, I mean, Carlson's 3 years away at least. Bonnemer even is still 2 years away plus. Like, those guys are not going anywhere, in my opinion. I don't see any world you trade them. When they both get to the big leagues, then we have the conversation of, you know, which of those two, of you got three guys who all play left side of the infield, you got to figure something out. But like, that's not the conversation yet. I think right now you can look at Bonnemer as a guy who can shift to third pretty easily in terms of the future positioning. Right now, you've got Colson, you've got Vargas, you got to figure out what Antonacci, Mydroth, Mead, Sosa, right? You got to figure out those guys. When you say outfield though, because you mentioned like the Benintendi, Tauchman, Robert outfield, right? Like, I would love to enter 2027 with none of those three. And that might be like, I don't mean to say it in a bad way at all, but like, yeah. I would rather 2027 opening day roster feature none of those three in the outfield. I think that's the optimal scenario. I don't know if it's that easy. Obviously it's not that easy for sure, but like that would be the optimal situation for me, because then you have Braden as one. I still think a free agent ad in the outfield this offseason makes some sense. I really do. Right. I think you can decide to just punt off of a Tauchman, or if you can't move Benintendi's contract, sure, then you move Tauchman, and then you sign someone to play a corner, and then come the deadline, you find a way to move either Robert or Benny, and then you have Braden there. So you have free agent mystery, you have Braden, and then you have one of the three leftovers by the end of this season, is kind of how I view it.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, you could have said 2026, like before opening day, 2026 with all three of those names, I would have been fine. If they're able to move Robert in this offseason, I don't think they'd be against it to get rid of that $20 million. If they're able to get something of interest, Benny, again, would be a true gift to just get rid of that $17 million and the, what, 35 total left. And Tauchman, I'm only bringing up his name because he's cheap, right? Like, he'll be 36, I think. Really decent season, but his calves, his thighs were giving out on him on a consistent basis. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be knocking on Tauchman's door. So I didn't hate the name Trent Grisham throughout the year. I just don't know if they're going to go all in on that. I heard the number $85 million from Josh Nelson on the budget. I just talked to BZ yesterday. He said under $85 million. I think it's likely under $85 million, the opening day salary cap. So I just don't think Grisham is realistic. I agree with you that I think getting somebody that you could see there for the next 4 years, whether it is center, right, or left, Grisham's fairly versatile. I'd be for it, but again, I just don't think they're going to spend that type of money, which is frustrating. I don't think they're going to spend that type of money until like 2027 or so.
Yeah, let me give you some names and just tell me your initial just like, or like, you know, no way, or like whatever. There's an interesting class, right? Like, you're not getting Tucker or Bellinger. Those are the clear, like, 1A, 1B in terms of outfielders in the market, right? Beyond that, there's a lot of, like, okay, I could talk myself into it. Guys, not necessarily guys I'm thrilled about, but guys I could talk myself into. Miguel Andujar, Harrison Bader, a little expensive. Grisham, who you mentioned. Cedric Mullins, Mike Yastrzemski, Max Kepler. Anybody there pulling your ear a little?
I would say no to Mullins just because of injury and him getting older. I think a lot of his traits were being a young 20-something year old, and now the fact that he's over 30, I don't know if I love the idea of Mullins. Yaz, I can see.
I kind of like that one.
Because he's not flashy. He's very just like makes good swing decisions from the Giants that, you know, I think Bannister wants to model this organization as much as he can of the Giants possible. I think that one makes sense. Andujar, I don't know if there was enough of a value or enough shown to really.
He like, raked this year, dude. You'd be surprised.
He did,
he kind of mashed.
Is it going to be consistent though? Like I don't know if I'm not against it. I just don't know if that's going to be the guy that I'm like, oh, they need to sign Miguel Andujar. Yeah. Like I think Yastrzemski gives him a more of a solid floor than an Andujar. What was the other names you brought up? Grisham. I'm against it. I think it's too expensive.
I think is too expensive. I would like that a lot. I think that'd be a great move because that gives you even more confidence to move off of a Robert. But I don't see that one. Kepler is the other one I mentioned. It's not exciting. But it could be a strong side platoon who hits righties decently well. And
I think they've liked Kepler before. Maybe I'm wrong.
They've been linked to him in the past, yeah.
So I don't hate it. It does seem like the defense got a little bit worse over the past year, but nothing too bad where it could possibly rebound to past performance. I wouldn't hate Kepler. I'd probably go Grisham, Yaz, Kepler if I had to power rank him.
Yeah. I think that's about right. I think Grisham's probably out of play, unfortunately, and I honestly do think he could be kind of a trap player just because this was such a career year from him. And there was noticeable, tangible, development and growth from him, but I still think it's like, do I really want to put a lot of money towards that? I'm not sure. I think Yastrzemski is my, optimal target. It's not that much, sexier than Mike Tauchman. He's also 35. He's older, but with that said, he gets on base a ton. He runs a really high walk rate. It barely whiffs. Still putting up much better EVs than Tauchman is, for example. Right? It's interesting to me.
Yeah, around 140 games in every season since 2021, except 2023. Yeah. The other thing too, he was playing in a terrible park for lefties. Sure. And you look at his career splits, home versus away. There's about a 0.020 gap between his slugging percentage at home and away. 438 and 457. Coming to Chicago with positive wind, because I know the wind has been a factor at the Cell and Wrigley. I wouldn't hate Tauchman. I wouldn't hate Yastrzemski.
Yeah, I can see it. I still like my general view, and I want to get to pitching in before I have to let you go. But I think that my last take on the hitting side is like you just got to add at least one bat who's actually going to help your lineup. That's my stance. Like whether it is a corner infielder or a corner outfielder. I'd like to. That'd be great. Do I think that's realistic? Probably not. I'd like to see one actual, tangible improvement bat being added to this lineup.
And I just cannot figure out where that will be. I think when we look at their past offseason bringing in Tauchman and Slater, I think it will be someone that can, and with Taylor retiring, I think it will likely be an outfielder. And it's just mainly because the corners are fairly thin. It is, if you are going to revolt at a Josh Bell, that's the best option in the Sox price range. I'd love Moncada. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I brought him up for a real reason. I mean, come on, bring him back.
I'm good. The other name I should mention, though, I should mention this in outfield, Bill, but it could fit because of the infield-outfield combo. Ryan O'Hearn could be a really good fit, I think, because it's another lefty, which I get some pause on. But I think O'Hearn could make some sense from the standpoint of you could play first base, but he could also play your corners if you were to move off of a Tauchman or a Benny.
And obviously there's the connection between him and Ryan Fuller, him being a former Oriole. I don't know if I love the bat speed. It's not something that's ever been, 50th percentile or around 50th percentile. And just again, when you do get older, you are going to suffer from that bat speed aging curve more than others. It's a really good just plate discipline though, especially in 2024 when he got away from Fuller this year. It got a little bit worse. He started chasing more and whiffing more. So maybe they're looking at that. This is like a buy low candidate, somebody that has been in the 90th percentile of chase and whiff, and now them losing 40th percentile and being around 50s. I wonder if they think this is a guy that we know we can get back to where he was. I wouldn't hate O'Hearn, but I'd rather Yastrzemski, honestly. I think Yastrzemski gives you more of a solid outfield glove. I think he is a lot more consistent. Just from 2021 to 2025, it was never about the athleticism. It's about just being very solid as a hitter.
Yeah.
So I don't hate O'Hearn. Again, if they're spending money on actual baseball players that have had baseball cards for 4 years, I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. That would be nice for sure. Getting over to the pitching side a little, because we dove into the hitting, and it's tricky to figure out exactly where everything's going to shake out. Pitching is not that much easier. It's a little more, you know, straightforward than the positional weirdness of the offense. But on the pitching side, rotation, like the only name you mentioned was Shane Smith. And I would agree that that's the only name I'm probably locking into this rotation, right? I think that's the only person who has 100% earned a, you know, roster spot and a rotation spot, the opening day start, I would assume, unless a huge free agent is brought in, which won't happen. Beyond Shane Smith, who are like the next two guys up that you think have an inside track for a rotation spot on opening day?
I'll just one up you. I'll just give you my projected opening day.
Let's hear it. Go for it.
I don't think it's going to be too different from what we've seen. I think we're going to see Shane Smith be the opening day starter. I think Davis Martin did enough to where they can trust him for a month. Where if he has a bad month, maybe they look to remove him. But I think Martin, being around a four ERA guy, will at least make the roster. He can give you six innings. I think there is a high possibility they reunite with Martin Perez. That seemed like a guy that was very excited to be in that that clubhouse. He was early on in the spring training, like, no, this is where we need to be. Like, I'm excited to be a part of this team. And like, he was consistently a dog for this team. If he's cheap, I could see him. And then I think Burke will be in there. He was the opening day starter in 2025. I don't think he's fallen that much from grace. If he has a good enough spring training, I think they include him.
I agree.
I think Hagen's going to make it. I think that he showed enough where he's going to be throwing innings, right? I think that we've seen a lot in the past couple of spring trainings. They're willing to let guys win jobs. If Hagen comes out with the mechanic changes and throwing like he was at the end of double A, do you really need him to face triple A hitting? Like, if he's proven himself at double A, I don't think it's that crazy of a jump. I mean, Savage has proven it that, you know, you can make these massive jumps very quickly in major league if you are a high level pitcher with great velocity. If he has a good enough spring training, I think Hagen wins the spot.
I will say on record that I owe you a night of drinks if Hagen owns a rotation spot, because I do not see any universe where Hagen Smith cracks the opening day rotation. I will publicly be speechless and then owe you a Sean, you were right if that happens.
Does he need to work on?
I will break it down. there's no third pitch at all.
Okay.
That's my biggest thing with Hagen is I have a really hard time seeing any pitcher in big leagues in this current era of major league pitching surviving with two pitches as a starting pitcher. The follow-up to that is if you're going to have only two pitches that you trust, they need to be commanded well. Hagen's running about a 40% strike rate on his slider throughout his minor league career and even into the Arizona Fall League. He throws one pitch for a strike. And I still am very – this is not to say I'm not a believer in Hagen Smith long-term. I think there's a road ahead for Hagen Smith. I really do. I think there's a longer road ahead than the organization and than most people in the fan world would like to admit. I think he's going to be a very good pitcher, and I think he has a very deceptive motion that leads to more whiffs than probably the baseline numbers of his pitches will always have. So I think he's always going to have higher whiff numbers than the pitch arsenal will necessarily tell you. My issue with Hagen is the command isn't there yet to the extent you need it to be a big league starter. And when you pair that with the fact that he's throwing two pitches, he mixed in more changeups this last start in the AFL than he has so far, which is good to see. I wouldn't be surprised if Hagen doesn't debut until 2027. I'll put it that way. I think there's a chance he does next year, but I think, yeah, maybe he comes into spring training and he just blows the covers off the door and he does. I think Hagen is further behind than a Tanner McDougal or then maybe even a healthy Noah Schultz, honestly. I think there's still stuff to be done there, and that's why I think an add to the rotation in Martin Perez or somewhere else is going to be needed, honestly.
Yeah, I also threw out just the idea. I know it's very simple-minded of me to just go back in the White Sox era and just pull out Jose Quintana, but it's an under 4 ERA.
I'm down.
The only team that he was linked to in that Athletic article was the Brewers. If the Brewers are the only team you're bidding against, you just have to like maybe give them $1 million more. Yeah. Right. Like you can easily outbid the Brewers. If you are going down the Martin Perez road, Quintana has been healthier and better for longer than Perez. So I wouldn't hate Quintana. I feel like maybe somebody wins it out of spring training though. I think your points about Hagen are fair there. You know,
might
no,
be, what, might be Tanner.
Yeah.
Might be Tanner.
I don't hate it. I mean, what, he was drafted in 2020, so it's been a long time since he's been drafted. He needs to be added to the 40-man protected from the Rule 5. So I don't hate that one, especially with him having four pitches. I mean, that was the biggest thing about him was the spin rates. He has crazy spin rates on his curveball, slider, great fastball as well. So, I don't think they're going to add, though. And maybe they get somebody that's like that Bryce Wilson starter slash long reliever. I think they trust Vassell to be that. But like I really want them to find like a Griffin Canning. You know, like that's the one thing that Bannister hasn't done, and maybe they're looking for the next pitching coach, but they really haven't seen a guy that has struggled at a bad organization like the Angels or Pirates and have flipped him with a new pitching repertoire, right? Like the Dodgers taking Will Klein, taking him from the Royals, giving him spike breaking balls and turning him into a demon in game three of the World Series. Like, I'd like to see some of those success stories because the bullpen's been fairly disgusting and lacks those revitalization stories.
Yeah, and the other interesting wrinkle is Grant Taylor, because there is a world where Grant Taylor, you know, becomes a starter out of camp in the Garrett Crochet realm, and he takes that last spot. I am in agreement with you though there that I do think Burke, Davis, and ex Perez slash veteran free agent is probably the first four in that rotation, and then a fifth spot to be earned.
With Taylor, I feel like it's similar to Smith, though, because I understand he does have three pitches in a way. And I do think that's fair. I mean, that was my biggest complaint about Ben Brown, too, is it's like a decent fastball and a curveball that he can't throw for a strike. I wonder, though, with Grant, like, it didn't show that the cutter and four seam differentiated themselves enough throughout his outings as a closer to get those swings and misses. And I wonder if that's what hurt him as a starter, was there wasn't enough of a differentiation between his four seam and fastball to cause whiffs of the cutter and the four seam. And then that curveball, it's good, but I think it's that same issue with Ben Brown where he really can't locate it in an enticing enough location for major league hitters to swing at. I don't know if Grant has a slider that he trusts right now, because he really wasn't throwing it at all when he was a closer. Yeah. So I think Taylor and Hagen are kind of neck and neck, where if they show enough, maybe they could win a job out of spring training. But I think you're fair that, you know, I mean, Hagen, poor three pitches, lack of command, and then he has one start where he went over four innings this year. So, I mean, they're not going to get depth or length out of him.
We could also easily see a piggyback situation where we've got two of these young guys doing three, four innings each in that five spot in the rotation, right? So it's an interesting dynamic. Last thing I want to let you go here in a sec, bullpen. Assuming Taylor starts there for now, let's say he sticks in the bullpen, right? You've got Grant Taylor, you've got Jordan Leisure, you've got Mike Vassell, you've got Steven Wilson, ? Is that the four you think are kind of solidified? And then I think there's a ton of competition for everything beyond there.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nobody else that sticks out.
maybe Will Kelman, maybe.
Yeah,
because he's young.
He is a reliever. I think that was clear for Weekelman.
Yes.
He was able to get by in the lower levels because he could just throw hard. But I think that he is interesting enough. Like,
I agree.
His slider, something like his slider was like a 120 graded pitch. So I wouldn't hate Weekelman being a part. I think those five are fair. Leisure needs to like make it happen. I have a worse expression.
Half, it did the second half though. It was right. It was happening. It was happening.
Hopefully he comes out and has like a great first month where it's like, all right, Leisure has arrived. Vassell. Yeah. I mean, him giving you 100 innings out of the pen is so valuable. Obviously being a Rule 5 pick, I think Wilson, it can be a righty specialist that they'll keep around. I don't think Taylor wins a spot. We forgot about Gus Varland. I mean, is he even in the organization? Like, where's our guy? He got injured. And then I think he got released. I wonder if they try to bring back Gus Varland, because he was pretty decent in 2024.
I know Arizona.
He got picked up. Okay.
He's claimed on waivers and is on the 40-man currently from Arizona.
I that's the thing, is I don't think there's anyone really knocking on the door, because it seems like Paulette would be the guy that like could possibly be knocking on the door. He obviously has to be added to the 40 man.
Well, so I think he could break camp. I think that's the one guy who you're looking at as like a break camp candidate for like a reliever who at least is like worth keeping an eye on.
Is he good though? You know,
I think Paulette can be good. Yeah. I think Peyton Paulette can be a solid pen arm. I think it's probably unfair to him to say he can truly be a back end guy like we were talking about a year or two ago. I still think he can be a really effective pitcher though. He has the stuff is in a bullpen role. It didn't work as a starter very clearly, but in a bullpen role, he plays up. He can tick the velo up a little. I think he can give you seventh or eighth inning outings and be solid in that role.
Right. And there was like, I mean, we were thinking Eric Adler could possibly be a guy, like, I think before really 2024. Yeah. And then he had a really rough year. Like, there wasn't really anyone else like in the system that's like, oh, they're going to bring him back. And he's going to be, I mean, maybe Yoenji Gomez. I don't know if he'll be like a sixth starter or something, but
back. They might bring him back good as a long man, as a swing man type of role. I wouldn't mind seeing him again. He had some pretty solid outings, honestly, all things considered. And he was a guy that was, even though he was let go by both, I mean, a guy that was developed and put some effort towards from both the Yankees and the Dodgers. Like, I'm willing to take another year on that, and as your last guy in the pen type of role.
And then the two other guys that I'm wondering about, like, where do they end up? People like Shane Murphy because of what he was able to do lengthwise. And then the other guy that I was going to bring up is Riley Gowans, the guy that somehow might still be the savior of the Aaron Bummer trade. Like, he's pitched decently every level he's gone at, and it's been surprising. Like, you know, it's been nothing like, you know, sub two ERAs or anything like that, but he's a guy that gives you length, and he could pitch about six innings. So I don't know if he'll be bullpen material, but if like a Martin doesn't work out or a Cannon doesn't work out or Burke doesn't show enough and they start Burke and Charlotte, I wonder if one of these weirder names that were like Birmingham, Charlotte fringe guys sneak in.
I could see it from Murphy, especially because he has to be added to the 40 man too. I mean, I think he's going to get big league innings. He had a great season, obviously. So we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, then you've got the aspect of both Thorpe and Mason Adams coming back off of TJ, who I think both will get big league innings during this season. It'll be a little while. So that'll be interesting to see. And then Prelander Baroa, another name from that TJ group from last year, who I think Baroa, when healthy, should immediately slot into the bullpen, given the other names we just mentioned there.
And there were threads too that were like, hey, maybe Prelander Baroa is a fringe starter guy. No, I know, but like there was just yes. like those joke threads where people are way too bored and they're like, oh, he's got stuff where maybe he could transition into a starter. Adams and Thorpe are interesting because I really hate Drew Thorpe. Not in a bad way. Like, I think he's a fine person, but I just hate that he was the headliner of that Cease trade. I don't think that he's got major league stuff. I think that he is a guy that can do really, really well against college kids and lower level major league hitters, but I don't think he's got a third pitch that's good enough. That fastball isn't good enough. I don't really want to put stock into Thorpe. I liked Mason Adams. I thought he was going to possibly win a job out of camp this year, and then he got injured. Adams, I think, he got TJ, I think, around May, so he won't be ready for.
Yeah, it was late April when he got TJ, so it'll be more of a June arrival. But the interesting thing with the rotation, and we'll wrap on this, like, I think when you look at it, you say, okay, it's not super flashy. You've got Shane Smith, you've got Davis Martin, probably Sean Burke, either Perez or some other free agent veteran, and then one of the young guys most likely. I do think there's going to be a lot of room for turnover there. I think Davis Martin is a trade candidate. I really do. I know he's a fan favorite. Fans love him. I think he's like a great guy from every interaction I've had with him. But like, I do think he's a trade target. I think he's a guy you can be comfortable moving, and a team would be okay taking him on as a back-end starter, a fifth starter for a good team that just needs one more guy who can churn some innings for them. And then from there, it's like everybody else other than Shane Smith is earning a job still. And if they don't perform, you've got Tanner, you've got Noah, you've got Hagen, you've got Adams and Thorpe coming back. Like, there's arms and they're knocking on the door. So even though I do agree with you that only one young arm probably cracks the opening day rotation most likely, that still puts you in a position where more of those guys we mentioned are going to take over a spot for people who underperform in that rotation. Same thing with the bullpen.
Yeah, and I think the biggest question or the biggest guy that I'm looking out in this rotation is Sean Burke. Like, I think he is the guy that really showed some flashes and some terrible flashes. And then when you look at his stuff plus, the fastball's above average. Everything else is under 90. And the changeup, I know changeups are really weird to like grade stuff plus-wise. He had some games where they were over like 105. He had some games with his curveball where it was over 105. He had some games with the slider where it was 105. Like, finding consistency in his repertoire, I think, is the biggest thing for him. And if he could come in to 2026 with full control over three of those pitches, four seems like a lot. But if he can maybe sharpen those movement profiles just a little bit more, I still have faith in Sean Burke. Like, I have way more faith in Sean Burke being a long-term piece than a Davis Martin, Drew Thorpe, or Cannon.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I've been a Burke truther for years now. I'm a big fan of his, and he's a great dude. And I think you see the flashes of a guy who could stick as a legitimate 3-4 starter. And you see flashes of a non-big league pitcher, right? So it's tough, right? Because I do think there's a world where if Burke really struggles this year, it might be a bullpen role because he could shove in a bullpen role. I think Burke's stuff could play up in a bullpen role, but first and foremost, he has to throw strikes. Like that's really what it comes down to for Sean Burke. So I'm with you there. I think Burke is the guy who could, among that group beyond Shane Smith, he's the guy I'm most keyed in on earning and developing and really carving out a future spot in the rotation.
Yeah, and he's another guy too. We bring this up consistently, and I don't know if we give him enough like slack. Like this is only the second time he's ever pitched over 100 innings right. in a season. You know, he's had some injury issues with Maryland, and then running into stuff in the minor leagues, like small stuff. Like, you know, now the fact that he's gotten over 120 plus in a season, now that level's been set, like, is it easier for him to reach over that? Like, can he give you just a higher quality 120? I think that it's possible. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pieces and no clarity, and I don't think there's going to be much competition. That's right. The thing is, like, there'll be some minor league ad or free agent ads, but I don't know if there's going to be, like, true competition. Because last year, Colson had to compete with Jacob Amaya, and you know his back lost him that competition. Nothing with his player or anything
that. I still think there is one bat added. We mentioned the bullpen, right? I still think you need to add one legit reliever. I think it would be a poor way to go about things to say, hey, Grant Taylor and Jordan Leisure, the ninth inning is yours, instead of giving them one, even if you say Grant Taylor is the closer, right? Giving them one more guy that you legitimately trust in the deepest class of relievers we've had in the last 5 years for agency wise, like the relief pitching free agent market is deeper than any other position this year. You got to add one trustworthy reliever to help those young guys develop. At one hitter, pitcher, starter, I think it's either a Perez or a similar type of starter. I don't think you're getting anything exciting on that front, but I do think a veteran starter, a legit reliever, and at least one everyday hitter. It has to be the general outlook of free agency there.
Is there a reliever you like? Because there hasn't been one that like sticks out massively to me.
I think Luke Weaver as a buy low would be a really nice one. I would really like a buy low on Luke Weaver. This season was rough. He had some ups and downs, but I think you saw in 24 the signs of an elite reliever. I think that can make a lot of sense. I think either of the Rogers brothers, neither are flashy at all. It's not exciting. It's not very fun, but I think both those guys could be a, you know, seventh or eighth inning guy that you trust to go out there every night. I think Kyle Finnegan could make some sense. I think Danny Colombe could make some sense if you want to get a lefty. The reliever class is genuinely the deepest position this offseason. You got to add at least one good reliever. There's so many guys out there that could be immediately the third best reliever on the White Sox roster, honestly.
Yeah, I think Tyler's interesting. I know Banny's brought up a lot of mentions of different arm angles, and obviously doesn't get more dramatic than Tyler Rogers. I hope they are able to find some diamond in the rough. Like, I know this is a disgusting name, but like, you know, what if they turn Tanner Rainey into something? A guy that has been bouncing around with like the Nationals in Pittsburgh, some fairly bad pitching organizations. He just got picked up by the Tigers late in the season and showed like some flashes. I mean, he's had some games where his, you know, fastball has been like 118, 116, 120 stuff plus. Like, maybe you just need to find a guy that needs to just hone it in just a hair more and just needs that like ever little bit of coaching. I think the Sox showed enough in 2025 where the coaches are there, or maybe the ideas are there. It just needs to be implemented a little bit better. And hopefully they can do that now with, you know, Katz and Thames, et cetera, being gone.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. We will see what happens. Sean, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. As always, really appreciate talking ball with you. I could talk for so much longer, and I know we'll have more opportunities here heading into next season. We appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, Elijah.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.